Hey y'all, welcome back to Manual Therapy Blog. This is Matt Thomason, your host as always. Up next in our interview series, we get a very special treat today. More special than anything we've done so far, in my opinion. And the reason for that is we get to talk to three people at once in this interview. Today, you'll get to hear from Tim Krunk, Kent Kaiser, and Seth Blee. Part of the thing that I got to do an interview with these three guys all at once is that we did it in the car on a drive from Denver to Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And the whole reason that the four of us were together all at once in one car driving for 3 hours was because we were going to the Certification of Functional Manual Therapy, where we were all serving as examiners. And it was such a good opportunity, I couldn't let the three of them get away without getting a chat with them. So just because the drive was close to 3 hours doesn't mean that the interview was close to 3 hours. However, we did get to speak for a pretty much the normal amount of time that we get to talk to everybody with. Tim is the owner of Krunk Physical Therapy in Greer, South Carolina. Kent is an owner of Comprehensive Physical Therapy in Eugene, Oregon. And Seth is a director, clinic director of Innova Health Systems in Alexandria, Virginia. Consequently, the four of us also serve as instructors for different organizations. One in common is the Institute of Physical Art. And Tim and Kent and myself also serve as instructors for comprehensive manual therapy seminars, with Tim and Kent being the owners and me just being an instructor. So in this interview, you get to hear some of the normal questions that we get to ask. You don't get to hear as much of all the follow-ups that I might like to ask each individual, because otherwise this would be a three-hour interview. So to try and trim it down and keep it to a normal time length, we just ask some of our usual questions, and if there's a good follow-up to that, then we certainly do that. But you get to hear some funny stories from all three guys, and a lot of really good advice given along the way from their years of experience in different backgrounds. So if you know any of these guys, you'll certainly appreciate it. If you don't know any of these guys, you'll certainly appreciate it, because they have a lot of nice things to say and wonderful things to impart. So hope you guys enjoy it. As always, like us on any of our social media, Twitter or Facebook. There's different ways to listen to this episode, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or straight from the website. Download it, share it, do whatever you need to get it out to friends or family or colleagues that you think would appreciate it. I certainly appreciate you guys as listeners. If you have any suggestions for me, then by all means, leave those at the website or email me directly. Maybe the easiest way to email me is matt@manualtherapy.blog. All right. Thanks very much again. Hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Tim, Kent, and Seth. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today's interview is with group of three gentlemen physical therapists. Actually, this is a unique interview because we're all sitting in a car driving from Denver to Steamboat Springs. Here today is Seth Blee, physical therapist out of Virginia, works for Innova Health Systems and is also a staff physical therapist for the Washington Nationals Baseball Club. And Tim Krunk, owner and physical therapist of Krunk Physical Therapy in Greenville, South Carolina. And Kent Kaiser, physical therapist out of Eugene, Oregon, co-owner and PT at Comprehensive Physical Therapy. Guys, thanks for coming.
Glad to be here.
Happy to do it, man.
Yo.
Since we got all of you together, I think one nice thing would be to start with, as we usually do, just telling us a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, or where you grew up. So, Seth, since you're sitting next to me, how about you start?
All right, thanks, Matt. Originally from New York, born and raised on Long Island. I went to college at Boston College, then PT school at Columbia University, where I lived in Manhattan for a few years. Spent my first couple of years out of school working for the New York City Board of Ed, school system and doing that in addition to some outpatient orthopedic clinics. And then for the last 17 years, I've been down in Virginia where I manage two clinics for Inova Health System, which is a large not-for-profit healthcare system down there just outside of Washington, D.C. We treat primarily orthopedics, and in the last few years, my population has focused almost exclusively on sports. As you mentioned, baseball is a big part of what I work with right now. So that's me.
And Kent, can you tell us more about yourself?
Well, I was born in Bozeman, Montana, and lived for a couple of years in a homestead in Three Forks, Montana, but predominantly grew up in the San Fernando Valley in Southern California. Subsequently, staying in the area to go to school at Cal State University Northridge, which its PT program there also was tied into UCLA in those days. So I went through that program and subsequently left there to go to the Northwest, which I've been 40 years in practice now in the Northwest, starting in Seattle, doing a master's degree in kinesiology at University of Washington, and then subsequently a master's degree in human anatomy statistics at the University of Oregon, and a partial half-done doctorate in manual therapy through Andrews University. So that's my schooling. Years of a lot of continued education. My first half of my career was primarily sports medicine and working with mostly professional athletes and Olympic athletes, since I'm also an athletic trainer, that would bode well. I then moved into the world of manual therapy and developed skills there that I could then eventually become part of starting the North American Institute of Physical Therapy out of the Northwest, which is now national. At the same time, longstanding being an instructor and finally an examiner, etc., with the Institute of Physical Art, which we're all heading up that way to do exams this week. So a lot of other additional, since 40 years in there, it would be a little too long-winded to tell about all the things I've done. But so I have been a busy physical therapy nerd, as I like to say.
Great. And Tim, by the way, for those listening, Tim is driving at the moment. So if he doesn't talk too much, you'll understand why. We're in Denver traffic, and he's got to pay attention to a number of things. So, Tim, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself.
And actually, as I speak, we're kind of sitting in traffic more than driving right now. So, so my background, I was born in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and lived in the Nashville, Tennessee area up until elementary school when my dad was transferred up to the Delaware area. So I grew up majority of my, I guess, middle school and high school years in Delaware, attended the University of Delaware, where I graduated from PT school in 1990, and took my first job in Cary, North Carolina. Wanted to move back down to the South and kind of like the Carolinas, so I had done a residency, or I guess an internship there, and ended up taking a job out of school. That was primarily a sports medicine environment that I was working in the first 4 or 5 years, I guess. And had an opportunity in the mid-90s, as I was getting involved in some manual therapy training, had taken a few courses and met a gentleman that many of you may have known, Jeff Ellis, and through some coursework, LPI, CTI. And long story short, had an opportunity in the mid to late 90s to move to Long Island, New York, to kind of do a residency and pursue manual therapy certification through the Institute of Physical Art, which we're here for this weekend. And also at that time pursued a master's degree in orthopedic manual therapy at Touro College. After that time, I worked in the Delaware area. I was in Long Island, New York up until about 2001, and then lived in the Delaware area, and following that pursued a doctoral degree at MGH, Institute of Health Professions. So that's kind of been a little bit of my clinical pathway. I'd say most of my career has been early on sports medicine and then specializing kind of in orthopedic manual therapy, and have been a part of the Institute of Physical Arts certification, I guess, since the late 90s. So quite a few years now, and it's always an exciting time to be out here, and great to be with a group of guys like this and really good friends, so glad to be here.
Well, thank you, all of you. One of the things that we tend to ask similar questions across all the interviews, and I know at least two of you, if not all of you, have a background in sports and athletics growing up, so I'm assuming Seth did as well. If you could tell us a little bit about, that may not be the case in terms of what got you interested in physical therapy, but how the three of you were influenced to become a physical therapist is kind of one of the things I'm interested in next. So,
what do you think, Seth?
Sure, I'll start. Yeah, as you mentioned, I think a lot of physical therapists get into it by their own injuries and own mishaps. That was the case for me. When I was in high school, I was an athlete, and my main sport was wrestling. And wound up being my junior year of high school. I had two shoulder surgeries, a handful of injuries, and wound up having therapy on and off to get me through that season. And after my surgeries, I spent a good amount of time in therapy and knew that I wanted to do something in the medical field, but wasn't really sure what that was going to be. But I enjoyed my experience as an athlete going through physical therapy and just seeing that that was even a career option for me. When I went to college, I wrestled in college as well and had more injuries and spent more time on the training table, so got to know some more people that treated me. And also did a good amount of volunteer work, volunteered with a pediatric facility too, with some kids with some pretty significant physical disabilities, and just saw a wide range of what PTs do and really enjoyed it, and decided that was a lot more interesting for me than becoming a physician, and I liked the time that the therapist got to spend with their patients. So that was really the turning point for me, was just some of the things that I got to experience while I was in college.
And so then you just made the decision that being a PT was, from your experiences, was what you wanted to do with your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't really sure what type of PT, because I didn't know what were my options were. But I think, like a lot of people, I went in thinking, as an athlete, I kind of like the sports side of things and didn't realize all the different avenues that there were. So I enjoyed, as I mentioned earlier, my career doing some pediatrics. I did some home care, did some neuro, in addition to my outpatient orthopedics. So that, I've been happy with the decision ever since.
And Kent, what influenced you to become a physical therapist?
Well, I'll go back to the fact that I've been out 40 years, so remembering real reflections of what were your motives can be questionable, I guess. But what I recall and understand that I first got introduced to PT having a sports injury in high school in baseball. I did a head slide and hurt my knee and had to, and I really enjoyed the therapist and what they were doing. I didn't think about it much, but when I was playing basketball in college, I went every day to the athletic training room, and I was definitely interested in the idea of what was starting to be a burgeoning of sports medicine in the 70s. So I noted that. I was a pre-med student. I did get accepted to UCLA for medical school, but what I recall was that I had two friends that were older who were in UCLA ahead of me, and I watched them over that 1 year, and I really saw some changes in their personality, to be frank. And I met a lot of people in PT at Cal State University Northridge, and I really liked their well-roundedness and their thought process. And so I kind of was moved toward physical therapy really by the fact that I thought I could do more working with kids and sports medicine by going that direction than I would have if I went into medicine. Also being a little bit of an anal retentive learner, I knew I really have to push to be a surgeon or something to be satisfied. And I don't know if maybe it was there might have been financial questions in my mind then, I don't remember. But that was what I basically did. And I did head into that, and here I am 40 years later, still working and teaching and enjoying every bit of it. I think physical therapy is the best profession for me, and in my own bias is the best profession. I've seen a lot of sadness, joy, and frustration in the healthcare world. And I definitely like to separate out physical therapy profession as an entity versus healthcare, which can be, you know, it's pretty crazy these days.
Yeah. All right.
And one last thing is definitely an influence. Is I come from a family that my parents were deaf, and so being around a deaf community a lot all my life, and within that there are kids that were deaf that also had cerebral palsy and so forth. That was a big press for me to be interested in working with children, kids with disabilities, as well as healthy kids that are in sports medicine. That was all part of that big motivation as well.
Okay. All right. And Tim, if you can talk while you're driving about how you decided you wanted to become a physical therapist.
Well, Matt, like you mentioned, sports had a strong influence on me. I played high school football and then dabbled in club rugby for a little bit of time in college, but also ran cross country and just kind of had a real interest in strength conditioning and cardiovascular training. And I think it was really that influenced or directed me towards physical therapy. I was kind of getting towards that time in college where I really needed to hone in on a career, make a decision as to what I was going to be doing, and was really not sure about exercise physiology. I was even interested in nutrition, but had, I'd say, most of my interest really in anatomy and wanted to be in a field that would allow me to study and learn more about that. Wasn't real sure what that would look like, but was actually just reading a magazine and in that read about a physical therapist that had been working with a few athletes, and that kind of, I guess, piqued my interest in what would be involved in going into the profession of physical therapy. So I started exploring that more. So despite the fact I'd had some personal injuries and had even been in physical therapy a time or two, it was really just more of an interest of mine in human anatomy, the human body, and really the beauty of God's creation and the fascination with that and wanting to learn as much as I could about that, that headed me towards physical therapy. And to this day, I still have a passion for it and love learning. So that's kind of what got me into it.
Great. Now, we'll switch up the order here a little bit so that Seth can think about his answers instead of being the first person up all the time. But as a follow-up to that question, my next question to you guys is, what got you interested in manual therapy, specifically for physical therapy? So, Kent, if you could enlighten us for you and what got you interested in the manual therapy side of PT?
I was doing what I consider a pretty high level in sports medicine. I was very fortunate in getting into a clinic that was a national level clinic and had professionals. My initial mentorship of the people there, one of them was the Olympic track coach, and so he was like a father figure to me, and I got to become very integral in working with him with the women's Olympic track team in 1980, which was the year we were going to go to Moscow and didn't get to. That was a disappointment. And I was getting proficient enough in that whole realm. I mean, of high level kinesiology with different athletes and stuff, working a lot with that. So a lot of it was training, exercise, specificity of training. And I loved it. But I also was fortunate to be able to start teaching nationally in the area of sports medicine. One of the things that moved me over to manual therapy more specifically was the fact that as I was teaching, and my area of specialty that I taught was the kinetic chain of running injuries that could relate to like pelvis, which was kind of a new and different thing because everything was kind of a single joint entity. And I tried to see if we could push the envelope a little bit with other people that were famous that were teaching then, and they were pretty much just wanting the teaching to be I felt just kind of a camaraderie time, get together, do a talk, teach, get paid a little bit, and then go spend time out, you know, pubbing and so forth. And I was really disappointed with that because I wanted to see a more complicated growth in what we understood mechanically, etc. I've always been an avid course taker, and in my early career doing the manual therapy courses, I started to see that it had an area of growth that was really phenomenal potentially, and that potential for learning and growing and then eventually being a part of a community teaching in that as well as working in that really moved me over. And lastly, the fact that the longer you're out as a physical therapist, hopefully you're improving and getting better, you should learn something after all of the years you work. You start getting more complicated people, and in that, it starts bringing you kinds of patients that aren't necessarily sports medicine, but are people that really need help because they're in complex pain type of situations. And there you have to refine your manual therapy even more, and you become hooked into very high-level clinical reasoning, lots of learning about sequencing of techniques and treatments, and you start learning how powerful the hands can be once you've had that training. Manual therapy, I think, has a long learning curve, so that's frustrating for some, but I think it's well worth it because it's very rewarding to see people that have great need make great changes with your help. That could be a really wonderful thing.
And Seth, what got you first interested in manual therapy?
Well, I would say when I first started off treating patients, I probably didn't have the best examples of manual therapists around me, so I didn't really know a whole lot about really what I was even missing in the profession. But I did have the opportunity to take a bunch of classes. So I started off pretty early in my career just taking classes from a lot of the different big-name manual therapy organizations out there and started to pick and choose different techniques here and there. But I wouldn't say that anything really hooked me onto manual therapy until I first took the course PNF. So one of the foundational courses for the IPA is our PNF 1 course, and it's interesting now because as we head up to Steamboat, that's a course that I teach and also that I test for, so I've enjoyed kind of going full circle with it. But back when I first took PNF, I started to realize that the hands were so powerful, and not just to mobilize and to stretch and do soft tissue work, but really to facilitate and train and resist. And I saw that I could start using some of those techniques on everybody that I saw. It didn't matter if it was, a 7-year-old kid who had CP or a high school athlete or, anybody that came into the clinic, I was really hooked on using PNF with. So that was a big influence for me early on. And then I would say I started to get more and more interested in the IPA and took more and more of their courses. And the first time that I took the course, it used to be called Functional Orthopedics 2, which is now FM2. I was in one of those fortunate groups where I was just in a class with a bunch of really good, motivated manual therapists. And that was a good eye-opener for me because I saw how good people could be with manual therapy, even just watching and listening to the groups around me. And that definitely motivated me to want to take more and more courses. And I definitely went down the IPA route for most of my courses then. But that was probably the biggest influence for me, combining the manual therapy that we know and got a little bit of in school with functional mobilizations that Greg developed and with things like PNF and some of the courses that Vicky has developed as well. That was really kind of my turning point for manual therapy.
And Tim, how about yourself? What got you interested in the manual therapy side of PT?
Well, as I mentioned, I had started out in more of a sports medicine environment, and the one word that honestly comes to my mind when I think about that question is frustration. The first 4 or 5 years when I was in sports medicine, I think, I had some good mentors and people that I worked with, and I'd say overall we got reasonably good results, but it was definitely more of a therapeutic exercise modality with a little bit of hands-on approach. And when I took my first manual therapy course, which was probably in 92 and actually was an FO1 course, FM1 now, I guess, right? That was what I'd say first got me interested in manual therapy in general. Went on to take LPI and CTI, which I mentioned earlier. And I was really caught and impressed with the quick results you could get by getting in there, making a good diagnosis, and getting your hands in, making change quickly. And I just saw some results that I had not seen previously. And I said frustration because many times in that environment, we'd have people that might come in that were rather straightforward problems. We tended to work a lot with peripheral joint issues, shoulder problems, knee, foot, and ankle, and much less spinal, and I'd say less complex patients in many respects. But when we would have those more difficult patients come in, that's when the frustration would start, because I would, you know, start to scratch my head, and it's like, all right, am I going to go for the hot pad, the ultrasound, and massage, and kind of see how that goes, or how am I going to handle this? So, once again, a desire to learn and to grow, and seeing some pretty profound changes early on in manual therapy is what first got me interested in pursuing that in more detail. And, you know, once I'd done that, it's kind of like anything. We jokingly say we're manual therapy junkies. It's just, you know, course after course, trying to learn new approaches, new ways to do things, and getting better with your skill set. And so that's really what got me started in that area.
Good. Yeah, I can definitely say for myself something similar to Tim, that my desire to be a better manual therapist usually comes out of frustration when I can't help someone or a patient that's in front of me, especially the more complex people. And I don't let it bother me too much, but it is just a motivating factor. You want to help as many people as you can that come to see you, and if you don't have the knowledge or the skills yet to be able to do that for somebody that's coming to see you, then it's kind of a motivating factor to keep working, keep practicing, keep learning. So next question, guys, for all of you are, over the years, Kent mentioned that he's been practicing for 40 years or more, and I think Tim's been 25 or more. Seth, I'm not sure how long, but
Coming up on 20.
Certainly longer than I've been a physical therapist, but along the way, who have been some of your biggest mentors? And let's see. We'll start with Seth. And if you could also tell us why they have been some of the biggest mentors for you along the way.
Sure. Well, as we've all mentioned, we're on our way to go test for the IPA's Functional Manual Therapy Certification Program. And I'll stick with the IPA theme, because that's definitely been the biggest influence for me. Both Greg Johnson.
No,
we good?
Yeah, we're good. Sorry to interrupt you, Seth.
That's all right.
We had a directional question. More challenging question.
Yeah, we got to go over the mountain first.
And we're very hungry, so as soon as we can stop, we're going to. For me, Greg and Vicky Johnson were by far the two biggest influences for me. In several different ways, and just seeing obviously what they have developed in the IPA, but also from a manual therapy perspective. And I think I've been fortunate to take a lot of courses from a lot of different people, both inside and outside of the IPA. And I can tell you that pretty much every IPA instructor that I've been around, and some more than others, people like Greg and Vicky, and taking several courses from Tim up here, and Cheryl Wardlaw, and just some of the instructors that I've been around, I think their passion for therapy is pretty infectious. You know, you start to see that these are not only great clinicians, but they're great motivators and great people that just make you want to become a better therapist. So I think I could point to almost every instructor that I've had in all of my IPA courses coming up as being an influence for me.
Okay, and Tim, biggest mentors for you and reasons why?
Wow, yeah, that's there's a lot of people I'd say that have heavily influenced me over the years in physical therapy, specifically manual therapy. The first on the list would have to start with Jeff Ellis, who I mentioned earlier. Through continuing education courses, as well as having the opportunity to work with him in the clinic kind of side by side, certainly he has been most influential, especially earlier in my manual therapy career. Others I would have to mention, sitting right here in the front seat, my good friend Kent Kaiser, I would consider both a colleague and kind of my older brother in manual therapy. Kent has had a good influence and has inspired me in many respects in my manual therapy training and career over the years. Others that I would say, it's interesting, you know, I could point to some that I've actually read, some that I've seen, you know, through video, others, you know, that I've had coursework with, maybe not as many courses, but having taken many of the NAOP courses, Earl Pettman comes to mind immediately, especially with manipulative techniques, others, you know, Laurie Hartman would be one that would have to come in there. And even, you know, I said reading things, Bill Greenman, Carl Steele, Mark Bookout. So I'd have to mention a lot of names in there, and there's many I'd have to leave out, but those would be just a few to start.
And Kent?
This could be a blog in itself. I liked what Tim said, because the reality is that so many people can be influencing on you. And even to I say how many students I've had, when a student realized they can mentor you or teach you and help you grow, even though you have a lot of years of experience. But I've been very blessed, and I like to mention that because those that know me know that I like to spend time talking, and I've written articles about what Newton called is standing on the shoulders of giants. And God has blessed me incredibly with being in situations with a lot of time with some really impressive people and some shorter times with some very impressive people. For example, when I was in PT school, one of my internships, the preceptor had preeclampsia and had to not be able to do my coverage, and so they need coverage. And I was at County USC, and I got 12 weeks with Rene Caillé, who is, if you don't know that person, was probably one of the top two physiatrists in the history of U.S. And the things I learned from him, probably not totally what we should have been doing in PT. I got my first class as a hangout at a clerkship, at a internship with Maitland. So I was very blessed to be with a lot of people that were very old-time people. I'm old enough to be around where I was around Florence Kendall, other people, Margaret Root. I got taught in PNF in my PT school by the friend of our director, which was Maggie Knott. I mean, that's something not many people can say. But there's two categories that I talk about mentorship for me, and it's those that were mentors that are truly the one that takes you under their wings. And you know, and I teasingly call the people I get to teach Padawans. That would be something Matt would like, because he's Star Wars aficionado. But Padawans, where you take them under your wings, and I've had people that are very important in the Canadian group system. David Lamb, who again has been passed away some years now, but he was the one that tied together manual therapy between the Australians and the Norwegians when there was not much love lost between those groups, and he was the one that tied them together to create what was now an international federation of manual therapy. And because of him, he brought lots of things to the United States in manual therapy. Earl Pettman and people in that category have been able to mentor me that way. But I was always very lucky, and like I said, in my sports medicine days, to bring around a lot of very famous people also in sports medicine. And so I kind of came in with an eclecticism. And so the other group of mentors would be people that certainly are giants in their own right, but you came in with somewhat of instead of a entourage kind of sense to the being their Padawan, as I said, to being a comrade. But like Tim said, and I appreciate that, great therapist in his own right, but recognizing he's got a little bit of an older brother who 20 years of experience, you know, on top, does play into it. And so there was definitely the three amigos of Jeff Ellis, my good friend Greg Johnson, who in his own right, you can't be around him without being mentored and learning, because he has an epiphany every day. And if you just stand there, you're going to learn something. His wife, Vicky, who is a driving force in many ways. And so people like that, my friend Jeff Ellis, who is my good buddy, but, you know, again, you could not but be mentored and learning by being around those people. There's a tremendous amount of people that fall in that category, and just for brevity, as much as I can do, I have been blessed with so many people in that regards. And so what I hold highly is the mentorship of being able to be eclectic and have an eclectic system, even though I teach and or train people in particular paradigms. I like the fact that trying to find that you have a way that you treat and evaluate in general, but that having a broad spectrum of knowledge and depth and breadth and abilities and skills is the best way for you to do the best job with patients long term, meaning that if your left and right brain is as big as it can be, you'll walk away when you retire, which I'm getting close to now, knowing that you've done the best you can do, and you don't have to compare to these mentors, because there's always this little bit of, you know, wow, they're above me, they're my mentor, but really to feel like you're on an equal plane because you've done the best job you can help everybody. So there's a little philosophical comment there, sorry, but mentorship is an important area. Knowing those people who come ahead of us is so important to recognize.
Good. Now, the next question is, given how long each of you have been a physical therapist and, you know, differing stages in your career, what still excites you about going to work every day and continuing to treat patients? We'll start with Tim this time.
I think one of the themes I've kind of mentioned already a couple times is just learning. One thing that keeps me excited and motivated about what I do, aside from the fact that I like the mechanics, I like the art of it, the science of it, I think is the fact that I learn every day. There's not a day I go to work where I'm not learning something from a patient that I'm seeing. You know, as we look at each individual, we know that people function individually and in unique ways, and so I think one thing that just keeps me constantly passionate and engaged is the fact that I love learning and I learn every day. And then being able to take those things that I learn and apply them again on a daily basis keeps me stimulated. I know there's probably a lot of other fields and other things that I could do that would be fulfilling, but I can't think of too many professions as I look around where there's just so much to learn each day. And I think that's, I think everyone in this car would agree, that's why we not only come to things like certification to do reviews and to administer exams, but we also continue to learn through courses. And so I guess we do that also in the clinic on a daily basis. And that's probably the biggest thing that keeps me motivated. And also I think just the patient interaction. You know, I enjoy being with people and learning not just about their struggles physically, but just getting to know individuals and being able to help them in whatever way we can. So I like working with people and I like learning. So those two things, I guess, would be the things that keep me motivated.
And Seth, what still excites you about working every day?
I could echo everything that Tim just said. He said it very well. Yeah. No, I think it really is the learning that comes with every day and the understanding that to be a great therapist, you have to be open-minded and humble and willing to learn from every patient. It's not the kind of job that you could see somebody and say, oh, I know what's going on, and you're just going to do something that you've always done, because you're going to miss out and you're not going to help nearly as many people that way. For me, as far as patient populations, I've learned a ton in these last few years as I've kind of focused a lot more of my patient care onto professional athletes, and for me that's been a great learning process, just learning some of the demands and the pressures that go with that, both from their side of it but also from the medical side of it, and having to keep people healthy and get them to be able to perform at their highest possible level. And I think for me the biggest motivator is, how do you couple your manual therapy skills and a lot of your facilitation skills, and I go back to PNF with a lot of things, and how do I take those types of manual therapy interventions and try to use that to make somebody better. You know, we talk in the IPA, everything's about function, and we want people to be able to function better, and that's whether you're talking about rolling or walking or, you know, doing sprints out on a ball field. So I think just being able to put together different components of what we've learned throughout our career and try to take it to different populations is definitely been my motivator most recently.
Right. And Kent, what still excites you about going to work each day?
Well, I'd love to say ditto to the two gentlemen. And but to add on top of that, for me, my philosophy has been, and to instill at my work, is to go to work every day and have fun. And part of that has been, I'm remiss, I have a partner of 30 years, Linda Zhang, and unbelievably anybody in business, we've been partners for 30 years, and we have literally not had one disagreement or argument in that 30 years in relationship to the work. We've strived real hard to have a chemistry, and I think chemistry in when you're in a work environment is really important. And I've been really blessed, again, to be doing residencies and fellowships to where we can also look and handpick some people. And, you know, it's exciting to go to work as you get older and see young therapists, like one I have that I think very highly of is my colleague Beth Templeton. I'm going to shout out to her because she's the young superstar that I get excited about. And then I, as I get older, actually get more and more excited more about evaluation and clinical reasoning. I think really using your brain for what we as physical therapists have been trained at a higher level in clinical reasoning is very exciting. And but last of all, when you're out 40 years, I learned something my sister told me, which is when you can finally say, I love my job, but I like not doing it a little more, you're probably ready to pass it on to the young ones.
All right, good to know. The next thing we wanted to ask you guys are, what are some things that you hope younger clinicians either learn from you or take away from you during their time or interactions or mentoring or however you want to say it, just with their time with you? What are some things that you hope that they take away, that they either use in their life, whether it's professional or personal? Kent, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm going to steal a line from my colleague, friend, and co-teacher, etc., Earl Pettman. I like them to say, I stole from the best and got rid of the rest. And I hope that, you know, whatever you can pay for it, I believe in paying for it. You give everything you got. And don't be worried whether it's of the most value. It, you know, people are smart and will pick out the things that work best for them. That's very important. The other thing I hope that they learn to do is to grow and get better, but try hopefully work real hard to be humble and try to get, don't let pride get in the way of that it's all about the patient, it's not about you. And probably lastly is the fact that, I had it in my mind there a second, is that here's an important one, because we were talking earlier about different generational values and how things change. But one of the things I see different is when I was a young therapist and the people that are in my cohort that way, I think we don't have the training and schooling per se until after we got out, but we really understood professionalism. And I see a worrisome bit of lack of professionalism in the young ones today that are physical therapists. And I would hope that they would take it upon themselves to really understand what it really means to be a professional, that PT is not a job, it is a calling. And so that would be something I hope, if listened to, could be able to give that inspiration about being the best you can, get your brain as big as you possibly can to help everybody. It's about the patient. And really learn to be a professional.
Great points. Tim, what do you hope that younger clinicians learn from you or take away from you when they're with you?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. There's a lot of things that could be said. And, you know, one, I think is hard work. You know, manual therapy, like many other things, does not just come, for most of us, naturally and real easy. It's like everything else. It takes work. So I try to instill in therapists the concept and idea, which is new for some of them, that it takes hard work. It takes effort. It's fun, but nonetheless, you got to put time in. And so be willing to put your hands on a lot of patients. Be willing to spend time learning from other therapists that have had more experience and more years than you. You know, just be willing to put your time and energy into your profession, the calling that you have. As Kent said, we do see it as a calling, and it's something that you need to put time in to get good at. Also, another theme that comes up to me is what we talk a lot about in the IPA, and that's both the art and science of physical therapy. And certainly I come at things a little bit more from a mechanical biomechanics, and I'm a pretty linear thought process person, but one thing I really like about mentors I've had, and I could again list many, I think of Greg Johnson, and one way he has had such a strong influence in my career and in my training is the artistic side of things. And sometimes you need to think outside the box. Sometimes you need to just maybe turn your mind or brain off for a moment while you try to feel something, looking at infield, whatever it may be. But at the same time, we need to embrace the science. We need to be involved in reading research, maybe doing research. We need to be involved in not just what's happening in literature and physical therapy, but in science in general, and applying that as we're able to what we're doing. So again, that art and science, and there's a tendency, I think, to gravitate towards one of those two directions. But really, I try to instill the idea that we need to balance that out. For some of us, we need to work more to the right, some to the left, but trying to be the best well-rounded physical therapist we can. And of course that takes years, not just weeks or months. And so that'd just be a few things that come to mind.
Great. And Seth, what do you hope some things that younger clinicians can take away from their time with you?
Boy, those guys said it very well. I can I'll just try to rephrase some of that in my own words, but I would completely agree with both of them. I think one of the big parts for me is that hopefully people will take away that I truly care about my profession and the patients that I work with and my staff that I've mentored. And I just, like Ken had mentioned, I've seen great examples of that in my career, and hopefully people will pass that forward, that they see that I truly do care about what I do and am passionate about what I do, and that they would pass that along. To echo one of the things that Tim mentioned, I think there's no substitute for hard work, and I am in a position where I hire and I train a lot of newer therapists, and I get these therapists that come out and they say, oh, a year from now I'll have my own clinic and I'll have my own practice and be doing all these things, and I hope people realize, as these guys mentioned, that it is a long process and you don't get good overnight, and it does take an awful lot of work. I think some people expect some things to be given to them, and it really just takes an awful lot of work, passion for what you're doing, and a willingness to put the time in and put in, the extra time and the extra work that goes with it. As I'm sure you could ask Kent and Tim, and they're certainly not going to ever tell you that they worked 40 hours a week. I think the people that don't want to put any extra time in are going to be mediocre therapists. I have one therapist that has said many times, it's easy to be average and it's easy to be mediocre, but if you really want to be the best therapist, whether it's owning your clinic or working with some elite population or developing courses or whatever you want to do, that takes an awful lot of time and energy and passion that I hope people will be able to see that the four of us sitting in this car hopefully have, and can some of that can rub off onto some others that we will hopefully influence.
And by the way, guys, if you hear another person respond to a question you've already answered and you want to add to something, then just let me know.
I would just tell them.
I love that.
I could see the hamster wheel turning in Kent's head. That's kind of why I said that.
No, we have Matt here, so it's really nice to say, that he was one of those individuals who was frustrated with the fact that he wanted to have 30 or 40 years of experience in like a year, and he had many conversations on how to hold back that and keep working hard. And I appreciate that the desire is really important, but I have been talking about a long time that my wife gives me a good word, and the word is watch your expectations, try more to be expectant. And I said that earlier to the guys, and that's a good word from her, because we have these expectations, and given the way healthcare is, and who knows right now, this is August 9th, 2017, and so you all guys know what's going on in the political world. It's hard to know, and there can be a lot of frustration because you get held back from moving towards your goals because the system is not necessarily progressive. It can be very regressive, and so Matt was one of those that's learned that, and in being in his patients, it's been better off for him, and I give him a shout out for that.
Thanks, Kent. One of the things that came to my mind as each of you were answering that question is obviously hard work was a theme, and the importance of being willing to dedicate yourself to a professionalism to improve your skills and improve the things that you want to improve. Since you guys have different backgrounds and different years of experience, can you give any advice to younger clinicians that, you know, just for example, I've heard you talk about the art of touch in courses before. Is there any other advice you can give to improve your something as simple as palpation skills or your touch or skills with manual therapy? Kent, you want to start off?
Sure. And that is true, what we're saying. The art of touch is that, teasingly, having hands abutta, you know, because the clients, they don't always know the detail, but they can feel when there's knowledge and care in hands, which is one of the great things in manual therapy. But the key is intention, you know. It is being willing to be open-minded to ideas, take in information, you know, have a learnable spirit, which is very important. A lot of times we get a little flustered because if it's an area of learning that's not our strength, we want to reject it. And certainly when you're new learning, you should learn in your strength because you don't want to be over frustrated either. But once you get good with a little bit of an area, you need to push yourself into frustrating areas and keep open-minded and have a teachable spirit. And then thirdly, you have that intention, and that intention is, I deem that I will be able to feel this, understand this, do this. That's a little ethereal in commentary, but I think if you think about it, you'll understand what that means. That, I think, is the crux of the whole matter, and everybody will apply that differently by their own personality, nature, skill, knowledge, but those three factors are the same no matter who you are.
And Seth, any advice for younger clinicians on how to improve skills like that?
Sure. Well, in addition to the patience and the hard work that we talked about, this kind of goes with what Kent was just talking about, it about intention. I think for every patient interaction that you have, one thing that I try to tell therapists that I work with is be present, be fully present. And that means you're not just yapping about some movie that you just saw and just looking around the clinic and not really paying attention. You're not going to learn that way. But if you are truly present and there and engaged with your patient and trying to work through some challenging things and work through some clinical reasoning, as Kent mentioned, and I've heard Greg Johnson talk about many times, the intention to learn is one of the biggest things. You have to have full intention that you're going to help that person, and to be fully present and commit to what you're doing, and not, as I mentioned, just looking around the room or thinking about what you're doing that day or what's your next patient going to be coming in for, but really to truly be present and soak in as much of that interaction as you can.
Good advice. And Tim?
Yeah, I agree with both those. Not a lot I can add. To Kent's comment, you know, again, we have to challenge areas where we're weak and be open-minded. And I always remember what Jeff used to say. One of his little quotes he would frequently say is, we need to be open-minded, but not so open-minded that our brain falls out, of course. And so that open mind is important. And also the intention, I would second that also. You know, there are many things that we can do as manual therapists, just like many other professions, I'm sure, that do become automatic. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, if you've done manual therapy long, you know, there are times where you can be talking and, you know, dialoguing and doing your hands-on stuff without even sometimes thinking about it because it's become so automatic. But we also know there are times where we need to turn that off. We need to quiet our voices, our minds, and really pay close attention to what we're doing. And if we get too much in those ruts of just going in and doing what we know, then many times we'll miss some of those learning moments that even our patients can give us. So, you know, spending a lot of time with patients, as I said earlier, and then as both these guys have said, what's your intention when you're in there is key.
I'd like to add one thing, that intention can be simple too. Like a manual therapy, it is a mechanical thing, and so hand strength. So an intention would be that you will have different kind of grippers to work on. You need to have strong hands. to get that softness is feeling different textures with that intention to saying, I want to know what it feels like to feel different structures. Tim and I, having our course in Foundations, one of the things we did playfully in the beginning was develop a little just touch section of lab where you're feeling different foam things that have structures in them. So can you tell the difference between a round marble and a flat lima bean and a piece of felt? And because it's really a matter of touch. And so that part of that intention is saying, you cannot be shy about touching bodies. And, you know, when you get into the 200,000 body range, not necessarily 200,000 different people, but when you've touched 200,000 times, you start having a specificity that just comes to you. And, you know, that means, again, patience, because you can't come out of school and touch 200,000 bodies in a year. I don't think there'd be enough time in the day. So that would be what I would add, too, is that, you know, it can be a little bit philosophical, but it can be very mechanical in what you practice. You have to practice skills constantly, every chance you get in any modality, meaning, like I said, learning to manipulate by pushing on a springy upholstered table, etc. Those are all intentions that have to happen all the time.
Great. Next question for everybody is, some of the mentors that I've had along the way, especially with my NIOP education, a few people have actually got to spend time with Dr. James Ciriax, and from what I've been told, at least, if he could choose one thing to be remembered by, he would have chosen differential diagnosis or selective tissue tension testing. And that got me thinking when I first heard that, you know, well, what about some of my mentors or people that I've been learning from? So my question to you guys is, if you could pick one or two things that, you know, say that you're no longer teaching in the future, you're not teaching anymore, you're not mentoring anymore, or even further along the way that you guys aren't even around anymore, period, what do you hope that you're remembered by or you're remembered as? Or that can go in a professional sense or even a personal sense. Give everybody a second to think about that, because that's kind of a heavy question. But Seth, you ready to answer that? Or you?
No, but I'll try.
Okay.
I'll take it in the professional sense, because that's a lot easier. I don't know that I want to get that deep to go personal. Well, in a professional sense, I would say, you know, that probably changes throughout your career based on what you're really passionate about at a given time and what you're working on. I would say for me right now, if I had to pick a focal area, it's in the area of what I would call functional stabilization. And that's really taking, as I mentioned earlier, taking PNF and some of what Vicki Johnson's developed with her core first strategies, and taking that into some higher level physical activities. And that's a course that I'm working on developing right now on functional stabilization. And I think that's probably what I'm the most passionate about right now, and trying to take that into an athletic population, because I've seen that's an area that's really missing in a lot of the sports world. You know, just to give you a little background on the thought with that, especially when you deal with athletes, I think a lot of traditional treatment for athletes has been very, very manual therapy based, meaning repeated soft tissue, repeated joint mobilizations and manipulations and stretching, and the same manual therapy being done over and over, and then lots of work in weight rooms, obviously, and a lot of strengthening. And for me, there's a big gap in between, and that's that really that neuromuscular re-ed piece that I think is missed, that you have to bridge between that manual therapy that they're getting and the strength. Is you really need that stabilization in order to gain the benefits of what you're getting from your manual therapy and your exercise. So, as I mentioned, I won't get into the personal side of what I want to be remembered for, because hopefully I've got some time to decide that one.
Yeah, definitely. Kent, there's one or two things that you're remembered by or as in the future. What would you want that to be, and why?
Well, again, I'm stating that I've been out a long time. I'm 63 years old. You you come along a path that where you understand when you're younger, you're in a very fast track, like you're in a very fast moving stream, and it's grabbing that knowledge, grabbing the home, grabbing the wife, grabbing the kids. And you come to a bit older, you fall out of that river into a lake, and that lake's energy is a whole different. You start getting a little bit more thoughtful. So I'm going to answer it in the way that for my life in general, I hope that people will remember or say that I showed the light and love of Christ in all the things I've done. And if I can have that, then that's a pretty good deal. I don't know what else could supersede that. Professionally, I hope that I, as a teacher, have encouraged learning and encouraged hope of wanting to do all the things we've talked about in this blog. I hope that one of the areas I probably do have pride in, hopefully not unduly, is that the area of functional anatomy and its relationship. We're having a car kind of slow up here. So the functional anatomy and my way of taking on that and mixing it eclectically has made for, I think, really unique ways to help come to understand how to work with simple to complex problems. And that might be a prideful area I'd like to be remembered at. And lastly, a little bit of fun with the fact that I'd like to be still having people remember my good friend Brian Howsworth and me and starting of the foam roller in 1988, how that came from what we thought would be a short-term fad to use for many, many years, and that our initiation of that idea and bring it forth was a unique idea, and so was unique, and that we had that part in that, and that's the little fun part. And so I'd say those are some of the things I can probably think of.
Yeah, even as Kent mentioned, he'd like to be remembered partly for that. He's still being humble in it, but I don't think a lot of our listeners would realize that Kent Kaiser and Brian Howsworth out of the Bay Area in California actually brought the foam roller to physical therapy. And it's being used all over the place now in different realms of physical therapy or even other professions, and those are the two guys that are responsible for it. So we'll probably get more stories on that if I ever get to interview Brian, and maybe if I get another interview with Kent in the future. So moving on, though, Tim, if there's a couple of things, one or two things that you want to be remembered as or by other people, what would you pick?
Well, it depends on who you're asking, I guess, what I'd want to be remembered by. It would be different from person to person, but I would say from my patients, the people that I work with, you know, this is all about our delivering health care and helping patients out. You know, I would want to be remembered as somebody who did work hard and cared about them and did the best I could to alleviate whatever problems they were having, improve their function, whatever goals they had and we had established. You know, I hope and pray that they would be able to look back and see that I have helped them, and if I hadn't helped them to the fullest, that they'd see that I had a desire to do that. For you know, as kind of an instructor with many of these courses that we teach, I hope that when I teach, you know, people will look back and be able to say then, and I hope now, that they'll see that my efforts really are to help them grow and learn as clinicians and to improve their skills wherever they are, whether they're young therapists or whether they have many years in therapy. I hope that they'll be able to look back and see that I was really committed to and working hard to further their education and learning. And then even, you know, we could get much more philosophical. I mean, I think we've got to all acknowledge that, you know, there are greater goals and greater things in our lives than even what we do in this profession. So I hope that others would see, though I don't always feel it, a selflessness in me and what I'm doing for others and trying to help out where I can.
Switching gears a little bit, like we mentioned earlier, you guys have been around quite a number of years and influenced a lot of people yourself, as well as being influenced by a lot of other people. What is or are the best or worst advice that you've either heard or given to another clinician? Everybody's pausing. You'll start? Did you say you'll start, Kent?
I'll start.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it simple because I can't do a whole conversation without having say something silly. And that's probably the worst, is anything I say joke-wise. Because people come back here and said, well, I thought I'd remember the mechanical thing, but I remember your dumb analogy or story or cow joke or something. But there's a little pride in that because it's fun they remember, but I'm not sure it's the best thing. I'll say two sayings, little sayings that I think are great. My mentor, Dave Lamb, when trying to understand why, you know, we can't intellectually understand everything, I say, what do you do when you're really getting to the nitty-gritty of trying to make and help somebody manually? And his words were, and I won't do his British-Canadian accent very well, but he'd say, you fiddle about, Kent, you fiddle about. And that is profound. If you'll take time to work in manual therapy, it is profound. Mine that I like to have in that area that I actually hope people remember because it has a lot of profoundness is wiggle, 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 spring, spring, spring.
Now, is that yours or was that Jeff Ellis's?
That was mine.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know. And Tim, best or worst advice you've either heard given or that you've given yourself?
All right, well, I'll take the negative here for a minute. The worst advice I heard was go into management, you'll make more money. So that'd be the only one I'll give you.
Okay. All right, Seth, best or worst advice you've either given or heard?
This is tough, Matt. I had a couple, and now I'm drawing a blank on them. I would say some of the things that I've tried to instill, and all of us in here have had many students and residents and tried to mentor staffs that we've worked with over the years, so I can't even tell you how many things I've soapboxes I've gotten on and tried to preach to my staff and to my therapist. But I would say be passionate about what you do and work hard and don't get frustrated. As we mentioned, some things take a while and don't expect to be at the level that a mentor is at. I mean, I've seen many mentors of mine and people that I've seen out there where I think, boy, they're so much better than I am. Why can't I be there tomorrow? You know, or today even more so. And just to realize that there's no rush. This is a long journey. You're going to get better, hopefully, every day of your career. So the fact that you're frustrated and you didn't help that person that just left, well, what'd you learn from it? You know, and what would you do differently? And how can we continue to grow? Because you don't know it all. And no matter how great you are, you come into the clinic, you know very little. And I would say I'm right in that same boat. And we have to go at it with an open mind. And I think the best therapists are those that have the most humility, that can learn from their patients and from, as Kent mentioned, even students that come in with them. You know, just be willing to learn and be patient.
Yeah, one of the things I might add on to that is a couple of people that, you know, I've interviewed so far, Jim Meadows being one, and Brett Windsor, the CEO of NIOMT. They both had mentioned how important reflection is in a daily practice. And I think it was Brett in my interview with him that mentioned, you know, when you're 10 years out of school and, you know, you could say that you have 10 years experience. Well, is it 10 years of doing the same thing year in and year out, and really you only have 1 year experience because you're not reflecting, you're not learning, you're not challenging yourself? Or, you know, are you 5 years out, but you have 10 years of experience because you're always going through that process and trying to reflect on each encounter with the patient? So I think that's something that's important too, and Kent has something to add on to that.
Well, since you mentioned Jim, I have to give a shout out to my mate, Jim, and I will tease by the fact that if you know the British-Canadian excellence and all that, but reflection was always at night in the pub with their baits. I hope you got that joke. Okay.
Yes. Thanks for that. All right, guys, got a few more questions going on, which is decent timing so far. But if you could challenge people in your profession, so younger clinicians or older clinicians, colleagues, peers, things like that, if you can challenge them to do something or to do something either for themselves or for the profession, or for their patients for that matter, you know, what would you choose and why would you pick it? Let's see. Tim, can we start with you?
Repeat the question again.
So we're going through the Eisenhower Tunnel, I think, right now, and we need to repeat the question. So if there's something that you could challenge other clinicians to, whether it's older, younger, peers, whatever, to either do something, be something, or within our own profession, you can challenge them to do something, what would it be?
Well, I mean, simply put, be the best at whatever they put their hands to. So, you know, we're speaking of manual therapy here, and maybe there's a special area within manual therapy, or maybe it's outside manual therapy, but, you know, whatever you choose to do, whatever you put your hands to, be the best at it. I mean, that's what I think we're called to do, is to do the best we can with what we're given, the talents and the time, and to use it wisely. So that's what I'd say.
Kent?
Yeah, it's a hard question in that the fact that most of the conversation we've had up to this point probably spoke to all that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a bit of philosophizing and some soapboxing, and I think those are all probably true to that question. Those are going to challenge you, you know, whether that be have a spirit of a good learner, be patient, many all those things. So that's kind of redundantly been said, so I'll say that. But, you know, the challenge is I think really, and my friend Greg does a discussion in class, and I'm going to kind of repeat one thing that I think is really important. He talked about every day, you know, can have its good and highs and lows. And he learned a very important thing, and I copy that, is that at the end of the day, you look at your patient list, you think about what you could have done better or what you did good, and et cetera. You say a prayer for each of one of those, you know, persons. You clump up the paper mentally, throw it in the trash can mentally, and then you go home and you be with your family. And you really got to do that, because physical therapy, we all have so much love wanting to really help people. Sometimes that pain behavior can come into us and it becomes negative, and we become hand slappers of ourselves. And it is definitely true. Why didn't I do that? Why couldn't I have done that? And you really need to remember that as much as we talk about professionalism, the challenge is to be a professional, but then to know exactly when to turn it off and be the family member, the good husband, the you know, whatever it is, the role that you play, that are also just as important. So that's the thing Greg once said that's so important, that I think is a challenge professionally. Or, you know, if you're on the other side, if you're a minimalist, the thing is to not just think that, well, I have good balance. You got to shore up that professional side. So either way, there is a really working hard at balance within yourself. And I'm the last person that should really be even espousing that, because I'm not known to be the most balanced person. I'm a way nerdy PT person, but that's my leopard spots. But for the rest, I think balance is important, but with all the other things that we talked about. So that's a challenge.
And Seth?
I think Kent just said that perfectly. And I think something that people need to realize is that PT is about service. You know, we're trying to serve our patients. We're trying to make ourselves better every day in that process. But ultimately, it is about trying to help patients. And it's really not about you, and it's not about me. And I know that I've seen some therapists early on that want to have that pat on the back and that need that pat on the back, and they need to realize that we're there to provide a service for our therapists. One other thing that I would add as far as something that I try to tell people early on in their career that we haven't touched on in this conversation is put yourself in a situation that you can be successful as well. You know, that's, you need time with your patients, and you need to be in a supportive environment. And I know, you know, I get a little bit pessimistic sometimes about our profession, because I know that there's a lot of physical therapy out there and practices out there that are not ones that I would want to go to, and are not ones that I would want family members to go to. And I think there's a lot of clinics out there where people just fall victim to their environment and their circumstance, and they get lazy, and, you know, they're just trying to make it through the day and see that other patient. And I think, you need to put yourself in a position where you can utilize your skills. I hear all the time in classes, students in classes will say, oh, I took that class and I really liked it, but I don't use it because I don't really have that much time with my patients. And that's really unfortunate. So I think they need to be in a situation where they can be successful.
I always got one thing to add, and going back to that balance point and what Seth just said is, I love the idea that you learn over time. Very important thing is, although you want to bend for your patients, never bend farther than they bend for themselves.
That's good advice, too. All right, we basically have one or two more questions, but instead of asking those, I'll kind of open it up. Any comments that you guys are mulling around or thoughts you guys are mulling around as we're driving here? If not, I can ask the question. But off the top of your head, anything specific that you just want to get off your chest or talk about?
Yeah, where do you guys want to stop to eat? I'm getting hungry.
Good point. Yeah.
The point is, yes, with that is, I think that you've just gotten us to be a lot deeper than this group of guys has probably been in the last year, so.
Yeah, it tends to be. That's the reason why I want to know these things. All right, well, we're probably going to be stopping sometime soon, but in the meantime, given all your years of experience in the car here, is there any particular body area or region that you see as commonly dysfunctional across the board? And, you know, that's open for any kind of patient population, but just kind of curious if you see any commonalities and things like that.
My area of focus that I feel has been very important, and anybody knowing our friends that we've talked about, like Greg Johnson, who teasingly is, again, not teasingly, is brilliant, but we teasingly say, you know, the coccyx is the king world. But for me, I have become very interested in our population, the TL junction, as being a very key place. I mean, when you said dysfunction, yeah, of course, you can see the epidemiological numbers of the neck and low backs in our country. I think those, as my friend Ann Porter Hoke would say, are the victims, not the culprits. And I think in our society, I think the thorax is a very key element to most of our population.
Okay. Seth?
Boy, if you ask me what's dysfunctional in a lot of my patients, I would just say their bodies. That's a tough one. But I would say if I had to pick an area that I would, if I had a few minutes that I would want to work on, it's a big area, but I would say the pelvic girdle and the trunk. You know, I think that's the engine for a lot of how our bodies move, and I see dysfunctions there that lead to everything from shoulder and elbow issues to foot and ankle issues. So for me, I would say the trunk and the pelvic girdle.
We're coming up to a stop here, but Tim, you want to add anything?
Sure, I'll mix it up. Obviously, I think those are important areas. Thorax, I'd have to agree. Another one, though, that I would throw out there is the hip. So I see a lot of hip joint issues, stiffness, hypomobilities, restrictions, and problems that, of course, are causing symptomatic issues in other areas. So I'll just keep it brief, but I'll say the hip would be another area I'd really want to focus on.
Great. So we'll pause for a minute because we're actually going to be stopping to grab something to eat. And if the guys are up for it, we might spend a few more minutes after lunch here. So we'll be back.
Thank you.
All right, so a couple more things I want to ask. You know, we just mentioned about, you know, if you could treat one area of the body across the board, what might it be? But, you know, if you can teach your patients, you know, across the board, something that's common that you usually end up for some reason or another having to teach somebody either about something or how to do something, what would it be? Kent, you have any idea?
Well, I know simplistically that and it's even been sometimes made a joke by some people, but properly getting up and out, up and down out of a bed or a plinth or a table is a piece of advice culturally we don't do very well, but when patients do that, I think that makes a huge difference in initiating posture and improvement in how they feel. That's a simplistic thing.
Tim?
Ask question again for me there.
So similar to what we were asking before about, do you see any common areas of dysfunction that you could treat on almost every patient? Do you see any common themes across majority of your patients that if you could pick one thing to teach them, what would it be?
Something to teach them. Wow, one thing. Yeah, honestly, I can't think of one thing. I mean, there's so many different things, obviously, in different regions. I mean, you know, usually with relationship to mobility in any area we're trying to work on, as we establish mobility, we want to reinforce that with a particular exercise. So usually in each region of the body, I have at least one or two go-to movements, functional movements, exercises that I try to encourage as a follow-up. You know, we usually call them kind of a prescriptive exercise, oftentimes related to maybe a correction we've done, but I can't think of any one particular thing off the top of my head.
Seth?
I would say, I'll paraphrase because I've read this somewhere recently, but I would say the best treatment sometimes is to teach people how not to need treatment, and to teach people how to take some responsibility for their own physical well-being and their own body mechanics and how to really use their body. And I will often tell patients that if you're continuing to need the same treatment done over and over, you're not doing something right. So whether it's something that they're doing on their own or, you know, some bad movement pattern, they need to learn how to not always need treatment.
Yeah, that's a good point too. All right. Well, that's basically the last question I have.
Can you add one part to that?
Okay. Well, Kent wants to add a part.
I'm just going to be a little bit of a dissenter in that I agree with what Seth said about having people become more proactive to take care of themselves. But I don't think in all instances not getting touched or getting manual therapy is a value. You know, I have a lot of patients that come out, are trying to be proactive, and it's like coming out to a car that's got a flat tire, and they keep looking at it and say, oh, it's flat tire, well, I'll come back later. You know, it's like, it doesn't change. There are certain things that happen in the body where why we are of value is there. And so them coming to us at the appropriate time to also help them with mechanical things, get reestablished in a home program, etc., I think is of value, but that is the patient taking care of themselves. I think what that alluded to about people not needing care is the care that comes from excess need for just reassurance or not having confidence in knowledge that they have. So people, and that's that old school of just give me a pill. So I would just dissent in that. I think manual therapy has its place because there are certain things that happen with people's bodies that they can't correct themselves.
Well, that kind of wraps up our questions that, you know, we normally ask in an interview. And because there's three of you that we're talking to, I haven't really asked any kind of follow-ups just for time's sake. But any particular thing, anything else that you guys want to talk about, mention? Doesn't have to be, but...
Nothing comes to mind, but I'm happy to entertain any questions you've got, Matt.
About just the certification, since that's what we're here for.
Sure.
So as Matt mentioned earlier, we're driving in this car to go in and test for certification for the function manual therapy certification for the IPA.
Well, you guys are examining, not testing, but yes.
Yes. Thank you. I would say, you know, something that brings up is just the importance of continuing education, and we all talked about how important that is for all of us in our careers. But I also like the idea of a certification process for a lot of people to really almost hold them accountable to learning, because we all know you can take a lot of courses and absorb some of it and forget the vast majority of it, and I give a lot of credit to people that do certifications of a lot of different types, just because you have to know material that much better and that much more. And you know, for these particular courses that we're going to test for, most of these people have taken these courses 2, 3, 4 times, because it's really about not just taking a course, but truly absorbing material and having ownership of the material. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't do nowadays in our profession. They'll just take random courses here and there from different topics, and I think there's a lot of great manual therapy approaches out there, and to actually hold yourself accountable to doing a certification is just knowing it to such another level that I would definitely encourage.
One area that I think is important, it goes through the theme of all of the conversation, is that after all these years of being out, I found that physical therapy is an apprenticeship type of profession. It's different, you know, it's not just become a professional, go out and function. The mentorship that we talked about and the importance of people in our lives is really important. It's so important to find somebody that can, that you like and you can be with, that is willing to pass it on, because it's the only way you can really fully have everything you need to be a total physical therapist, as far as I'm sure. And these kind of processes where they're not only just studying for certification, which is one part of a residency or a fellowship kind of idea, but the idea of also getting mentored is so key, not just book learning and didactic. And that moves you along a lot faster, which goes back to helping that area of gaining skills, so you're not in a faster, more expedient manner, so that you're not going to be frustrated with sometimes how long it takes to be master. And leave with the thought that always remember, the masters do the basics well.
Well, if nothing else that you guys want to talk about, Kent mentioned earlier some corny jokes and some cow jokes. So, Kent, if you could provide us with some of those to wrap up here, would you mind?
Well, I don't want to take away from the key element of the FM1 courses, which is the cow jokes, which were actually brought in and developed by our former colleague teacher who passed away a few years ago, Jim Bazell. But I'll be really cheesy and I'll put in my new ones I'm trying to institute, so I'm trying to get the stick down. Is for all you high-minded people that had actually English classes and learned a bit about English, there's these kinds of points. Never date an apostrophe because they're possessive. Santa's little helpers are called subordinate clauses. And there was a woman who is in labor having a baby, and she was yelling, can't, shouldn't, couldn't, wouldn't. Of course, she was having contractions.
And on that note, we'll end this interview process.
All right. Well, guys, I want to give you each a turn here. So we'll start with Seth. Seth, for listeners out there who are interested, where can they go to learn more about you or what you do or where you teach? If you can direct us to any place for that.
Sure. As far as teaching, you can find out information about a lot of us on the Institute of Physical Arts website, www.instituteofphysicalart.com. For me personally, my work website is it's www.anova.org, and then you can search for physical therapy and you can find my both of my clinics on there as well.
And Kent, where can listeners go to learn more about you or what you're up to, where you're teaching?
I technically can be found on the Institute of Physical Art, which is ipaconed.com, on the North American Institute of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapy. And for Tim and I, you can find us either at the post office or, that's a joke, or at krunkkaiser.com, and looking at our courses that we're developing that are, one, in supplemental to IPA courses and also specific kind of bringing together the eclectic ideas for manual therapy is our plan. Other than that, you're going to have to find me on WhatsApp, traveling hopefully the country the next few years with my beautiful wife.
And Tim, where can we go to learn more about you or where you're at, where you're teaching?
Well, as Kent mentioned, crunkizer.com would be one avenue. A second would be to go to my website, crunkpt.com. There are other courses that are offered that you might find through there as well. So one of those two venues is usually best. I think you can find things on Facebook, but those are probably your two best bets.
Well, guys, thanks very much. Hopefully we'll get to run into each other again and maybe chat more, get something down on recording. For all you listeners out there, stay tuned. We've got many more fun things ahead. So appreciate it. Thanks for listening.